Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, I'm convinced that most people who decide to get married have every intention of making it work. While they do know that divorce is an option, it isn't the result that they really want to have come about. And like that, many people focus on the wedding and assume that the marriage will take care of itself because they love each other. And, you know, I'm a great believer in love. Love is great, but it isn't enough to sustain a marriage. Mostly, this is because couples actually stop acting in loving ways towards each other. They start taking each other for granted, and they let other things become more important. Your marriage is a living, breathing entity, and it will die if you neglect it. But in truth, that does not have to happen. You can choose to do some small things every day to keep it alive and thriving. Marriage therapist and About.com's marriage expert, Marnie Feuerman, is here to share some tips on how to care for your marriage. So, Marnie, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Leslie. It's great to be talking to you again about this.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me, you know, when couples come in and they say, well, you know, we're no longer, you know, the statement I love you, but I'm not in love with you anymore. Or I hear we've grown apart. And then I start asking, well, how much time do you actually spend together? And they look right at me like I have three heads.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that, oh my gosh, you mean after the wedding day, we actually have to spend time together.
And say nice things to each other.
Yeah. It amazes me that they are nicer to the grocery clerk than they are to their partners.
Yes.
Which is actually, it makes me so sad. And, you know, you recently wrote a piece for About.com about five signs that a marriage is in need of tender, loving care. And, you know, one of the ones you talk about, it seems so simple. And that's just when people stop asking about each other's day. So why does this matter so much? Why is this such a good thing to do? And why do couples just stop doing it?
Well, it is a small and simple thing. And so I think when people think about it in that way, like, oh, that's small, they then translate to that to mean it's not meaningful. But it is meaningful, too. Because you always have to be turning towards each other. That's sort of the phrase that we use, and that's what the research tells us, that turning towards each other means turning in, turning towards your partner, in whether it's a bid for connection. And those bid for connections can be something simple like wanting to talk about your day or even asking about your partner's day. And that kind of communication shows caring, it shows warmth, it shows responsiveness, and those are really good qualities of a solid romantic relationship between two people, even a friendship, but we know there, it's more than just a friendship. But when we talk about conversations you would have with a friend, usually you would say, oh, I like to show that I care and I'm interested in them and I'm warm and friendly and inviting. And so that's the same kind of conversation. And so asking about your day is one of the really good things about it is it's not like a deep or a danger zone kind of conversation. You know, you're not bringing up the finances.
It's not the dreaded, honey, we need to talk
Right. Or you just overspent that day and you need to inform your spouse. Or, you know, so it's a simple thing and it's rather benign, but it does convey the caring and the affection and the warmth that you really need to show your partner. So I think that's what it does.
Well, and I think one of the things that people, one of the reasons why people think it's simple or unimportant is because, you know, I know how my partner's day was, or I'm, or worse, I'm not really interested in the minute, nitty-gritty details of their day. But in some ways, it's just an easy way to start a conversation with somebody. I mean, you know, nobody would think, oh, I don't really care when I talk to my friend on the phone and I start the conversation with, well, how are you doing? I mean, I'm interested, but,
right,
you know, it's still that kind of easy opening conversation, not that I necessarily want a minute-by-minute detailed agenda of what everything you accomplished today.
Yeah, that's a good point. People do assume, well, I know where they go to work, and I know generally what they do, and so they think, well, why ask? But on the other side, sometimes what I hear, which is sad, is people will say, you know, she or he doesn't really want to hear about my day. You know, it's always the same thing. Why would I talk about, you know, the meeting that I had? And the truth is, because it's really important, and you don't just want to spew off the facts, you also want to talk about how you felt about those things. You know, when you had a meeting, was it frustrating? Did you feel heard? Do you feel intimidated by somebody at work? Did you feel like you did a fantastic presentation? You feel really good? So again, it's also under the surface conversations, not just, you're not going through your calendar just saying, you know, from 1 to 2, I had a meeting.
Right.
You know, it's not like that. So it's really digging in about what your day was like, but also how you felt.
Well, and there's also another important thing that I think people forget about is that when you're separate for the day, you have a life that your partner doesn't have access to. So you know all of these people that they may or may not have met. And so it's bringing those people into your partner's world so that they know who your coworkers are or who your clients, you and I can't share specifically who our clients are, but many people can share who their clients are, you know.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I had this great sales call with, you know, such and such store or whatever. So you can share that kind of information. And it isn't really superficial, although I think that's what a lot of people think it is.
Right. It's not superficial, and it also helps create safety in a relationship, because when somebody is left to fill in the blanks and doesn't know what's going on in their spouse's day, and they assume things or something kind of happens out of the blue that doesn't fit, it I think affects that sense of safety you have with your partner. And so when you're hearing these things, when you're hearing about their day, it makes you feel included in it. It makes you feel like they're trustworthy, and that you know what's going on. And it really leads to a lot of very positive things. And so I hope that what people get from what we're saying is not to minimize the impact of it, and it can really be positive for your relationship.
Absolutely, and I do need to mention that there are some male-female differences with this, because a lot of times men don't see the purpose of rehashing their day because it's over and nothing can be done about it, whether it was a good day or whether it was a bad day. And if they can take a look at this as a way of reconnecting on a daily basis with their partners, maybe they look at it a little bit differently. It's like, yeah, it's not coming in and giving a report, but it's actually a way, a nice, gentle, easy way of reaching out to each other.
Yes, I like the word reconnection that you said, because it is an easy segue into reconnecting when you're coming home. Either you've both been at work, or when one person's been at home, maybe with their children, and then someone else comes home from work, the spouse does. So I do think it does that. It definitely serves that purpose.
Ah, the children. I'm so glad you mentioned the children. Because the second point you talk about is as being, you know, a way of your relationship needing TLC is when couples, frequently moms, put the children first. And it's really hard. I run across this all the time. In fact, several years ago, I had a young couple come in, and their baby, I don't even think, was 6 weeks old. And the first words out of her mouth was, "Don't tell me I need to spend less time with my baby." And I went, okay. And, you know, and I get it when they're that young. And I do. I mean, I have two adults now. They're not children anymore. So I get it. But how in our child-centric society can a couple do this? I mean, it's kind of like swimming upstream, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really bad. It's a definite killer of marriages, and I've seen it happen. And it's sad. It's not neglecting your kids, but it's balancing, and it's making time for both. But it's positive for your kids because they will see a very good role model for an adult relationship. So I think it is helpful, and I think it's a fallacy to think that you'd be harming your kids if you didn't try to be a little more equal with the time that you're spending and having some things that you do completely on your own, together as a couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've always been amazed sometimes when I'll be talking to clients and I'll ask them, you know, when was the last time you went out on a date or took a weekend away from your kids? And, you know, sometimes the kids are 7, 8 years old, and I'm looking at them like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure as a therapist, you can probably think of some things like this, like the reasons that people tend to do it. It's more than just the obvious, like, oh, my kids need me, you know, and they're so young and they're helpless. Sometimes I think people do it because they want it. It's a way to ignore marital problems, or it creates a barrier to intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes,
oh yeah, especially if one of you is sleeping with one in the bedroom of one of the kids. Definite barrier to intimacy, or the kid is actually in your bed with you.
Right, that says a lot. That's basically, you may as well wear a sign that says, "I don't want to have sex with you," you know, on your pajamas. And sometimes people don't want to make the effort towards being romantic. They think, oh, it's just too much effort, too much energy, and they can just use the kids as an excuse easily. Well, I'm just tired because I was with the kids all day, or the kids drove me crazy today. So there's reasons that underlie it sometimes.
Well, and the other thing is, it's sort of like, I liken it to, you know, the whole frog in the pot analogy, where when our when the kids come home from the hospital, or, you know, we have them, we give birth to them in our homes, I mean, they are absolutely completely helpless individuals, and they do need a tremendous amount of care and attention. I mean, I joke, you know, I don't care how precocious your child is, at 3 months old, you can't leave them on their own.
Right. Right.
You know. And so if it really does take 60 to 90 days for a new behavior to become a habit at 3 months old, your kid can't take care of itself. So you're so into that. And, you know, I think our society just keeps saying, well, focus on the kids, because heaven forbid they're unhappy for an instant in their precious little lives.
Right.
You know.
And I think people maybe boomerang depending on what their parents were like. They want to get it right. They want to correct things. They want what they wish they had, and so they're going to put it onto the kids now. So, and sometimes they go overboard with it.
Right, and sometimes the kids are like, "Mom, just let me breathe." You know, it's funny because when my son was applying for colleges, and I was, and I had been out of his schoolwork and homework and stuff. I got a great piece of advice when he was in the fourth grade about that, and so I was kind of back involved in his business, and he turned to me one day and he goes, "Mom, when did you get to be such a nag?" And I was like, whoa.
Wow.
You know, I was like, okay. You know, probably the day he slept through his SAT exam was when I decided, okay.
Right.
We need to get back involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but it is, and I so like you talking about the importance of balance, because that's an absolutely critical component of, you know, of having a healthy family life. And, you know, sometimes it is a lot easier to go snuggle up with your child than, you know, your prickly partner who who's just done something to annoy you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So this is Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with therapist and about.com expert Marnie Feuerman about how you can take care of your marriage. And, you know, if you're feeling that your marriage is suffering maybe a little bit from neglect and you want to get it back on course, I urge you not to wait another moment to take action. Take a moment. Give me a call or shoot me an email and take advantage of my free, no obligation, Create Your Happily Ever After discovery session. You can reach me at area code 919-924-0463. That's 919-924-0463. Or you can reach me by email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, thank you mom, no E, just L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. And now back to the conversation about how you can take much better care of your marriage. And we were talking about the balance. And one of the things that gets really out of balance, I think, is taking care of ourselves. And you talk about self-care being an important part of having a successful marriage. And I'm right there with you. So why do you think it's so important?
Yeah, I do think it's super important. You know, people, we knew what to do when we were trying to attract a mate. So everyone knows how to do this, and everyone, I think, can make the time to do this, which is to focus a little bit on yourself, not feel guilty about it, but also it makes you more attractive to your partner, and you're going to feel better about things, too. You've got to, it's like filling your own gas tank. And mm-hmm. I think we can neglect that in a lot of situations, whether it's, you know, work or taking care of extended family members or running around and doing favors for people. You have to put yourself like the biggest slice of the pie sometimes, mm-hmm. And at the very least a small slice, but you always have to be making sure that you're focusing on what you need to feel refreshed and feel good. So I don't want to downplay that at all, because I really think it's super important in your relationship, and people are going to notice, and your spouse will notice if it seems like you're just falling apart or you're not taking care of yourself. And it's not just a superficial thing, because people might think, what I'm talking about is, you know, something that they've got to, you know, have their eyebrows waxed perfectly and the hair always done and no gray showing and, you know.
Well, that lets me out on all three of those things.
Right. I know. We all can, you know, fall behind in that. But it's the overall effort towards looking nice and looking in a way that's attractive to your mate in a way that you did before. And you know, we see people sometimes when they do end up divorced, and then they start doing that again. And it's like,
exactly.
Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, why now? Why not do it for your partner? Is that part of the reason maybe things went south, is that you didn't focus on looking good and attractive to your partner?
Well, and one of the things that I also think is really important in this balance piece is, you know, this argument about staying independent or becoming completely dependent in a marriage, and you know, the whole idea of losing your identity. And I think that's a real challenge sometimes, because I remember, you know, picking my daughter up from daycare, and as soon as I would walk in the door, oh, it's Jenna's mom. I'm going, excuse me, I have a name. I have an identity of my own. Yes, that is one part of who I am, but it's not the sole part of who I am. And, you know, holding on to those activities, not just exercise and physical care of ourselves, but those activities and hobbies that really feed our soul, that make us who we are. I mean, several years ago I had a client who was a writer, And her husband said to her one day, in all seriousness, "So, when are you going to stop writing?" And I said, "Well, did you tell him when you stopped breathing?" I mean, because...
Right. No, that's an excellent point. And I think particularly, again, there's a gender piece here, because I think women can really go through a lot of transformation, especially from when they become mothers. And mm-hmm. they do tend to lose themselves a little bit, and they don't have the same time to do everything that they used to do. Maybe they stopped working. Some women have had high-powered careers that mm-hmm. stop working to stay home with their kids, and so they do have to transition, figure those things out, and realize that it's also okay, and that's what you're saying. It's okay to adjust to your new family dynamics, but keep a portion that is still the things that you love, that you care about, and that make you feel good.
Absolutely. And, you know, I hear, I don't know if you hear all the comments going, "But my husband won't let me."
Husbands have a hard time, do have a hard time with that sometimes. I mean, I think it does happen. I would look at that as perhaps if you feel like you can't make headway with conversations, with talking about the impact it's having on you and helping, you know, emphasize that you will feel really good if you can do this, and it will make you love him more. It's going to make mm-hmm. you feel even better about taking care of the kids, that it's going to make you a much more productive mother. If you still feel like you're hitting a wall with that, I would say get an outside person, seek out a counselor, even if it's just for a few sessions to get through a stuck issue, and talk about it. Because sometimes you need someone else to help, structure some of these difficult conversations. But
absolutely.
Yeah, that can happen. That can happen where it's hard to communicate that and why that's important.
Well, and I think it's also important to, and when I work with my clients, I talk about creating boundaries both around the couple, and sometimes that means the children are on the outside of the family, but also between the couple, that it's like, no. If you want me to be the loving, happy, content partner, then I need time to be able to feed my soul. I told my husband mm-hmm. years ago, this was before kids, I said, "Please don't ask me to quit dancing, because if you do, you will not like the person wandering around your house." Now, I don't do it anywhere yes. near as much as I did when we first met, which is fine, but I still need to do it every now and then so that I can connect to that part of me. And, you know, and when we make it, when we don't renegotiate when there are these major changes in our lives, when women, mostly women, not always, take on all the extra responsibility and never have that conversation with their partners about, okay, we still only have the same amount of time and now we have two extra people. How are we going to do this?
Right. And I would want to know also what would be threatening to the partner. Like if it's a woman mm-hmm. discussing these things with her husband and she meets some resistance, she may want to get curious about, well, what do you think is going to happen? You know, what's mm-hmm. your fear around this? Mm-hmm. And help him express what it is so that she can maybe reassure him, hey, this isn't going to happen. And like you just said, it's going to make me a much more pleasant person who can really feel like I'm, you know, loving towards you, and it's only going to help us. So, but flesh out maybe what is the fear if you're meeting up against that resistance?
Right, and sometimes couples don't actually check in with each other. They just assume, which we all know what happens
they just
when we do
it,
that.
Right.
But assume that our partner isn't going to like it, so we actually don't bring it up, or it's brought up in rather non-direct, what I call around the corner, up the back stairs and through the back window kind of statement, where it's like, no, here's something I really want to do. How can we make it work? Versus, well, I'm not sure, you know, he'll let me. I love that, let me. And then there's places for resentment to build up when, in all honesty, there's never been a conversation about it.
Right. No, that's all, you know, good advice to people, because it's true, you can't just assume, and yes, there are hard conversations, but that comes along with having a successful marriage, is approaching some of those difficult conversations. And the more you keep it inside, sometimes you build it up so much in your head, mm-hmm. and you, when you finally check it out, it's not the reality. So
right. Yeah, I love that
piece. You think, oh, he's
the reality
to
create
terribly,
in our heads, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, or she is, and they don't.
Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of other points you make in the article, and one is really critical. It's about being stuck in a rut. It's really easy to get caught up in the routine and the same old, same old. But you also talk about infrequent intimacy, and I actually think some of that is connected. So can you talk a little bit about why addressing these two issues is critical to a good marriage?
Yes, I think for it's important for a couple reasons, and they are definitely connected. There's two things that sometimes are going to seem a little bit opposite, but I'll put them out there anyway, which desire is a lot of times affected by novelty, newness. I think that's the way our brains work. You know, when we had that feeling when we were first in love, that kind of high, and we were doing new things together, everything was new, different, and we missed our partners. All of that is still good, and that's still a piece, but we have to almost make an effort to put it mm-hmm. in to our relationship, because when you're living with someone, you see them every day, and the newness and novelty can tend to be tied down a little bit. So
you think?
So we do need that, and so that means doing new and different things together. But the other side of it is that the desire is also impacted by safety, security, and your bond. And so those are things that are consistent, things that are predictable. You feel deep inside that your partner's there for you, that they're responsive to you. And so those two things can be almost opposing at sometimes, but they go together great. So if you can have both of those things in your marriage, which is not impossible, you really can, then you're not going to get so stuck in the rut and just feeling like things are routine and normal and boring and blah. And again, it's about prioritizing it. It's about making sure that you think about these things, you plan for these things, you don't just say, oh, we're just going to sit and watch Netflix again Saturday night, because
right.
that's what we always do. It's like, yeah, that's comfortable, and it's okay if that's, you know, you do those things, but why not go try a brand new restaurant? Why not go take a walk on the beach or take a hike or try something you haven't tried together before? Play a board game. Like mm-hmm. You have to think about, you know, what are some other things you want to do that you haven't done or haven't done in a while, and that's good for the part of your brain that kind of signals that novelty and gets those, you know, chemicals flowing.
Well, going back to the very first topic we were talking about, well, that's one of the things where when you start sharing your day with each other, part of sharing your day is, oh, I read about this great restaurant or this new restaurant, or, you know, I saw that, you know, this activity, whatever it might be, you know, street fair or you know, new hiking trail or mm-hmm. new club, whatever. And then that's part of sharing your day, and yes. then that's the novelty that we can introduce. And, you know, when I talk to my clients about, you know, as all good marriage, you know, experts do, talk to our clients about date night, I tell them, mm-hmm. I said, this is, the purpose of date night is to go out and have fun with each other like you did in the beginning.
And I know it almost like sounds funny to have to say that, but you do. It should not stop. Just because you got married, mm-hmm. you should not stop going out together. Absolutely not.
Right, and so. Not just the rote, you know, was it date night with Steve Carell and Tina Fey, you know, where every week they go to the same restaurant, or what was the other movie he was
right.
in? with, oh gosh, it's the one where they get divorced. I can't think of the name. It was my daughter's favorite movie. But, you know, where they're out to dinner, their weekly dinner, and, you know, he's ordering dessert, and she says, I want a divorce. And it's like, well, I mean, but that's because that's what they do every week. It's like, no, don't go to dinner and dissect the relationship. Oh, my gosh, let's just pour cold water all over it. It's like, no, let's go out and do something new and exciting. And you know what? If you don't like it, that's okay. It was, what, a couple hours out of your day? No big deal. You know.
Right, right.
But it's,
agreed.
But you also get to see your partner in a new light. By doing these new things.
Yes, definitely. And also, I think it's okay to go out with other couples as well. That's always fun and nice. And but definitely just the two of you. And it doesn't have to be this romantic candlelit dinner. Mm-mm. But it's something new, different, and that you're just, there's just an openness to trying new things in a way that you probably already did when you were dating. And if you think back to when you were dating, it's the same, it's just the same sort of formula. It's the same kind of thing. It just seems to maybe flow more naturally, and now that you're married, it just takes a little more effort and focus and planning.
Right, and so I tell people, put something, you know, make a date on the calendar, but don't necessarily make a date for what you do. I tell people to have, you know, date jars where when they find something interesting or think they would like to try something, they just write it down on a piece of paper and stick it in the date jar. And I recommend having an indoor date jar and an outdoor date jar because sometimes the weather doesn't cooperate with you, especially where I live. You know, so you'd have this great idea that, oh, we're going to go out and do something. And no, we can't do anything. Let's just watch TV. It's like, no, go to the indoor date jar and pick something that you can do inside and you're still, and then that way you also don't have to come up with something on the spot either.
Right, right. That's a neat idea.
Yeah.
I might have to do that too.
Feel free. Anybody can take that idea. It's a freebie. So, Marnie, where can people find out more about how to take loving care of their marriage and to find out about working with you?
Well, my website is www.thetalkingsolution.com. And from there, you can access my articles on about.com, plus I have a blog on there as well. And or you could just go to marriage.about.com to find that content. And right now, I also have on the homepage, if you sign up for my newsletter, I do send you an ebook called Marriage Therapy 101, How to Make It Work for You and Your Spouse. And although you may not need marriage therapy, and hopefully you don't, but there are some tips in there you might like to read about anyway to help your marriage.
Right. Do the tips so that you don't need the therapy.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there's definitely some things in the book that can help you with that. So that's where you can find me.
Terrific. And, you know, I know that we kind of go into this black hole. You know, first we're all about meeting the one and then about getting married, you know, the wedding, and then we go into the kind of this dark hole where there's no information and then suddenly, you know, something bad happens and we're all talking about divorce. But in truth, marriage functions the same way as most things. If you don't make the time to take care of it regularly, it will suffer from neglect. And the way to avoid major problems and all the hard work that it would take to get it back on track is to give it some loving attention every day. And if your marriage is important to you, then show it by taking care of it. Because in truth, we all only get 168 hours a week. And how much of that time do you spend on your marriage? So for the next week, just pay attention to that, see how you're doing. And until the next show, stay loving.